All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, The Zone, on a Wednesday, getting ready for the playoffs, Chiefs and Steelers, Sunday night football, the second-to-last game of the weekend and the super wildcard weekend. Let's talk to Cynthia Freeland from the NFL Network analytics expert joining us here in The Zone. Cynthia, how are you, ma'am?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I wasn't doing fine during the game on Saturday because the Chiefs were not playing in a way that I expected them to play or thought they would play, or most anybody really expected them to come out and play. They were in a game with the Broncos. They had a huge defensive play with the scoop and score, 80-plus yard touchdown. They win. Any takeaway from that game that you looked at from, getting by the Broncos in a game that did have something on the line, which is making sure you're at least the two seed, but you could also still have been the one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't take a ton of stock in this one, and a couple reasons. You know, it's always, there's things that we could never view as outsiders, and one of those is, when players really like playing for a coach that they know is about to no longer be their coach, like, it just, there's some differences, and they have a strong defense. So it's not, like, altogether unsurprising that it was a little weird and emotional and different levels of emotion for them than for each other. I don't know. I don't take a ton from that one. That, you know, I take more away from how the Jags were able to beat the Colts than I do, you know, the Chiefs going into a game that, you know, yes, there was something on the line, but, like, not really.
It was an odd.
It's a good team, though, too. Like, the Broncos, they're not as bad as their record might indicate.
And defensively, Fangio has always given the Chiefs fits and Patrick Mahomes. So there is that part of it. I just thought that there was going to be a team that was planning vacations and the Chiefs still had a chance of getting the one seed, that it would have, you know, had a team come out and just put it on the other team, and maybe the second half you get an opportunity to rest some guys. That wasn't the case. In fact, in the second half, they were still having to bring in Tyreek Hill from time to time, who was clearly hobbled and was less than 100%, where you would have liked to have him just sit down, put on some street clothes, take his helmet away so he can't go in the game, and get ready for the first round of the playoffs if Tennessee ends up winning. But it was an odd weekend because, so the Chiefs and Broncos have that, and we focus a lot on that, and wow, how could you go and play like they did? But Tennessee struggles against the Texans, and that's knowing that they had the number one seed on the line. Now, they get up 21-0, but they win 28-25. Buffalo has a chance to wrap up the East, and they struggle for a good portion of that game against the Jets at home. Cincinnati, I know that Joe Burrow didn't play, but Baker Mayfield didn't play either. Cincinnati loses to Cleveland, and they don't get the three seed. New England, you know, it was never really felt like they were in the game against Miami, and they had a chance to win the division. Indianapolis had a win and you're in game, and they got beat down by the Jags. And then Pittsburgh and Baltimore was a fun one, if not sort of not a very good game, 16-13 in overtime. It's an odd weekend with so much on the line for all of those teams. You didn't really see any of them go out and play really well and just say, you know, we're taking advantage of this inferior team we're playing.
I mean, it was one of the weirdest weekends of football. I mean, pretty cool to watch, but like a strange weekend in general. I mean, I had a chance to attend the Niners and Rams game, that one was, holy smokes, that was crazy. And then, you know, made it home in time, obviously, to watch the Raiders and Chargers, also a strange one. But, you know, I think that part of what I at least observed was teams were playing more conservatively. They weren't save for the Rams and Chargers, both, you know, and their opponents. They were playing more conservatively in terms of, like, the Bengals didn't show you much. Obviously, they weren't playing many of their starters. Mm-hmm. I think they were sort of taking their bye a little bit, or, you know, kind of that same equivalent of rest that we see with NBA players. And they all kind of took it. Many of these teams sort of, it just felt like they were playing, like, felt like a September game that we were seeing where, you know, they're not really showing you too much. Everything's sort of, you know, kind of, like, a little bit more muted than normal.
That's how I felt about the Chiefs, but, you know, there's a lot of, I'm not going to give them an excuse, but it felt like they were sleepwalking. It felt like there was a little bit of just get to the postseason. The field was awful that they were playing on. And I thought there was an element defensively of let me get out of this game without being injured by a decent portion of the players. So and Drew Locke was playing for his job and playing for maybe a job with another team or something like that. And he played well for the most part.
Yep.
So that was an interesting game. And I should have put more into, you know, the Chiefs. I want to say maybe I should have put more into the Chiefs, maybe not going out and playing as hard, but come on, they still had a chance to be the one seed. It's a little disappointing from that standpoint, but I don't see that carrying over. What do you make of that? Like, let's say there was a little bit of a letdown and they didn't have that emotional energy you would have expected in Game 17, Week 18. I think that's behind them, and now it's the playoffs. This team's been here, done it before. Do you think there's any element of that, you know, carrying over?
Yeah, no, I'm to say I'm 0% concerned is an understatement, because, well, first of all, I have an article coming out today, and despite not having the one seed, I still have the Chiefs with the best chances to make it to the Super Bowl for anyone in the AFC. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I didn't see anything that was, like, bad. I don't know. I was quite concerned. Like, there were some weird calls. There were some – the field was weird. There's a few things that you kind of just have to throw out of the equation for me when you're trying to see, like, what am I looking at here? And then you look across the other teams, and it was kind of the same thing as well. Like, okay, yeah, the Cowboys can beat up on a team that's not playing, you know, any of their starters too. Great. Like, it just is a weird – it was kind of a strange set of circumstances. All the data it just feels a little different. It's the first time we've obviously gotten data for this long, but, you know, maybe there was an element there of, like, you know, let's just keep it a bit more conservative, because, you know, this is what our strategy is. We're okay. It's very unlikely that we'll get the one seed. You know, we'll just do, you know, we're going to value the smart reps, meaning healthy ones and ones that are not showing things that we're going to pull out for the playoffs. Because I've seen Andy Reid just totally, you know, we've all seen it, you know, come out in the playoffs and be like, I've never seen that play this whole season. Like, that's from like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. And I thought Andy Reid said something on Monday that was interesting, that, you know, he was, I can't remember the way the question was asked, but it was essentially like, you know, maybe letdown wasn't the word that was used, but he said it was kind of a weird ending to the season that we win the division, but you still got to go out there and play a couple of games. And so, like, he didn't say it was a letdown, but he kind of, you know, inferred that, you know, sometimes you can have a letdown. He's never said that before. You never know. It's every game. You know, it matters. And, you know, our guys are ready to go. And, no, of course we showed up and played as well as we can play. And there was no emotional energy that was less than we should expect any given day. But it was an odd answer without saying it. He sort of said that, well, yeah, we still had to find a way to go. Still had to go and play two games. It was just an odd ending to the season. We win the division, and then you still got to go out and find a way to play those two games. Like, oh, interesting, because they shouldn't have had that feeling, and I don't think they did against the Bengals, but I definitely saw that against the Broncos on Saturday. So Cynthia Freeland is our guest, NFL Network analytics expert. How much weight and stock do you put in how a team is playing at the end of the season? Momentum, things like that. It's, you know, the most recent games. The NCAA tournament used to have the last 10 games that they focused on, and now they don't do that anymore in the selection committee. Does that matter to you as to what a team's done over the last month, month and a half, as opposed to all 16 and now 17 games?
I would imagine in a regular season, my answer would be yes, it does matter to me that the reps that they're taking and the what we're seeing in the strategy and how it's working. Like, it actually does work for a few teams. Like, I think the Niners are a team that you could say that about. However, we've had so many COVID asterisks this season.
Yeah.
It's very hard for me to say that that's the case this year, because I don't know what we've seen for several teams, because they've been playing with, like, you know, like someone's cousin and, like, you know, the, like a you know, someone I've never heard of. Like, all they've had to make do just based on what's been going on, like, in the world. So typically, yes, I would say that it does. I would overweight, and I always overweight recent games and games against opponents, certain opponents, a little bit more than normal. But it's this season. I don't know if you can. I don't think you can say that for everything. You can say for a few teams, but, like, I think the Niners are getting their act together in the right time. But they dealt with injuries and they dealt with their COVID concerns kind of earlier.
visiting with Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today, we didn't get into it in the first hour, but wanted to get your thoughts on it. The Chiefs have traditionally over the last couple of years, I guess 2 years can be a tradition, but over the last 2 years, going to the Super Bowl in 19 and losing, or winning the Super Bowl in 19, losing the Super Bowl last year, six games that they have played, they have started slow in those games. They have come out, and whether that is just sort of going through the motions or feeling out the other team, what have you. Obviously, the most famous one being the Houston Texans. They were trailing 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. They end up outscoring Houston by 41 in the final three quarters. Like, just looking at first quarter compared to the final three, in 2019, making their way and winning the Super Bowl, they were minus 20 in the first quarter in those games. And they were plus 62 the rest of the way. And then even last year, they were minus 10 in the first quarter in those three games. And then they were plus 17 the rest of the way. And that includes against Cleveland when Patrick Mahomes got injured in the third quarter. The part about, like, it's the exact opposite this year, Cynthia, that they've been starting very fast and then they've been slowing down. But what do you make of a team that does that, that's a slower start, having to come from behind? They couldn't really do it against Tampa Bay, but there were some other circumstances that went into it. But they have traditionally been slower starters in these playoff games in the first quarter.
Well, if you're going to be a slow starter, then you have to be really good in the pass game. And if you're going to be a fast starter, then you need to absolutely make sure that you can run the ball, run the air of the football after you gain a lead. And it's a different strategy. And obviously this year, the defense has allowed the fact that they've had these faster starts. The defense and the ability to earn running or approximate run plays with shorter passes, that's been what's changed things, right? Using those running backs as short pass catchers, et cetera. So you have to play complementary football. If you're going to be a slow starter, then you absolutely cannot turn the ball over on passing downs. You just can't. And your defense needs to adapt and adjust and keep you in it and give you enough time on offense to make sure that you have the ability to score. So, unfortunately, of course, you'd be like, okay, fast start and then just pin them to the mat and keep them there. Okay, of course, everyone, who wouldn't love to do that? Sean Payton one time told me, Cynthia, if you can teach me how to score a touchdown slow, let me know.
Like, that's right.
You just can't. Like, you just cannot, right? So, obviously, everyone would like that. But at the end of the day, it's what's happened is the team has played much better complementary football, and the adjustments last in seasons where they started slower or started slower and built up to the end, the defensive adjustments were the right thing and enough and kept them in it. And then the passing, there was, you know, it was a much cleaner passing game. There were a few interceptions, and the ability to just make improbable outside the numbers passes late in games was really, really strong for them. But the point is it doesn't really matter as long as you're playing the complementary type that allows you to make the adjustments you need to whomever you're playing and to have enough time and possessions in order to, you know, make sure that your offense is being efficient.
It's the playoffs, so, you know, it's a one bad game and your entire season is over. But the Chiefs are so much better than the Steelers, and I think they're going to just beat them down. They were up 24-0 at halftime against the Steelers, you know, the first go-around just a few weeks ago. Is there an overconfidence, arrogance, you know, on my part of this mismatch because it is the Pittsburgh Steelers? And do you think the game might be closer than the large spread that Vegas would indicate how much of a lopsided game it could be with how wide the margin is?
I'm never going to count out Mike Tomlin because what I've seen from that coach, I mean, now that what we know about some of his former players who shall remain nameless, but I mean,
it's a good point.
This guy probably should have gotten coach of the year like 18 times. Like, can you imagine the like dumpster fires he's had to deal with that none of us ever heard about because he just handled them? Like, wow, like incredible. So that's my first thing. And second, he's a brilliant coach where he's really done a lot with a very little more than we even really recognize until, you know, all this other stuff comes out and the players go other places. So I'm going to give him all of his just deserved, you know, credit and respect because he's wonderful there. My problem is that the way that Ben Roethlisberger has been playing, you know, these short passes, these quick passes, he's taken the most volume of them, but he's actually been quite inefficient with them. Despite having the most yards and the most receptions using quick passes, it's actually a very low completion percentage and a very low yard per attempt average. So even though he's doing it a lot, it's not really being super effective and efficient. And I think that that, and by the way, one thing that the Chiefs, there's no metric that the Chiefs rank lower than third in, like, so completion percentage, quarterback rating allowed, et cetera, passer rating allowed. Against quick passes, Chiefs are no worse than third in the NFL at stopping quick passes. So it's just a mismatch of figuring out, like, that's what that offense does, and this is what this defense doesn't allow to happen. So he hasn't even been particularly, like I said, Ben hasn't been particularly efficient using quick passes despite doing it a lot, right? So that's an interesting mismatch to me. I just don't think that this defense is going to be something that allows that offense to really, you know, score some points. You know, I like, and a lot of credit to Najee Harris. I think he's a fun player to watch. He should have got more consideration for Offensive Rookie of the Year, or he should get. I would assume that's going to either be Ja'Marr Chase or Mac Jones, but he should at least be in the conversation.
What is the, and by the way, Tomlin says he's optimistic that Najee Harris is going to play against the Chiefs with the elbow injury. I would be shocked if Najee Harris is not out there playing for the Steelers this weekend. Elbow injury, he's probably going to find a way
to play. Yeah, Benny Snell is probably not your best option.
I would agree with that. If Benny Snell's out there for the Steelers, then I will. If Najee Harris is inactive, then I may take out a second mortgage and put that on the Chiefs. I don't know if they're going to cover the spread or not, but what's the path for the Steelers to win in this game? I don't think it's going to happen, but again, it's the playoffs. We've seen some crazy things. What is the path if you're creating one that Pittsburgh finds a way to get past the Chiefs on Sunday night?
Is that TJ Watt, you know, it's that they pressure, and the offense can't get going. And then a guy like Najee Harris is playing and just runs the air out of the football. That's really the only... You know, that's the upset pass for me. It's that it's going to be Pittsburgh's defense, which is their strength. Minkah Fitzpatrick, T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, they form this little, like, pressure triangle and coverage backup that is hard to stop. But, you know, that would be the way that they would attack and be able to. And I guess, you know, also if the Steelers O-line can play well enough to fend off what Coach Spags is going to bring for them, which is going to be difficult because they have played quite poorly this season as well.
Yeah, the pass protection ratings,
bad.
Pittsburgh comes in, I think, 22nd in the league, and you're also talking about they're 22nd in the league with as many quick passes as they have.
Exactly. The context of that is amazing. 22nd in the league, and the guy gets the ball out of his hand in under 2.5 seconds.
They're still
like,
in the bottom third.
Bad news.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll see. Who's the, or what team do you think is the biggest obstacle in the AFC to stopping the Chiefs from making the Super Bowl? You have them as your favorite to go to the Super Bowl. What team is the biggest obstacle that would keep the Chiefs from getting there?
You know, I hate to say that I don't know what to expect from the Titans with Derrick Henry returning, because now we've seen a lot of adjustments made for him not being there. And they've added Zach Cunningham, who's a really good linebacker, tackler, run stopper. So that could be interesting just because it's going to look so different than it did before. And we already saw what happened before. So that one's interesting to me, but it might actually also, the Bills could be a problem as well, just because, for whatever reason, the ability to, you know, the non blitzing pressure situation, and they're stopping, being able to stop things like play action, the things that are kind of sort of bread and butter plays, that could be tricky as well. Those are the two. And I'm curious. I would like to see the Bengals and Chiefs rematch, just because, like I told you, like, I just find that fascinating. I think if they had that game to play five times, the Chiefs would win four. You know, like, it was a weird outcome for me. So I kind of want to see that one, but I think that the biggest obstacle, it might just be the Titans, just because of which I know is second round or whatever, would be presumably second round, but, like, just because if Derrick Henry is back and he's in full force and they've got some new things we haven't seen in a while, that could cause some problems early on.
Yeah, I mean, and they could play Cincinnati in the divisional round, you know, if If New England wins, then they're facing off against the Bengals, and I would be fine with that too. I mean, my preference would be a path to the Super Bowl of Steelers, Raiders, Patriots at home. That would be preferable if I had to choose.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd rather face off against the Bengals in the second round than the Buffalo Bills. That would be my preference. Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. Do you look at certain markers for teams as to what they do well or don't do well in the regular season heading into the playoffs that gives you an idea of, okay, this is a team that I think is a favorite or a second favorite or should make the Super Bowl? This is a team that really doesn't have a chance to make the Super Bowl. They got in the playoffs, but they're a dead team walking, and if they win a game, that would be success for them. Are there certain markers, statistical-wise, that you look at with teams and say these are the teams that can or cannot win their conference?
Yep. So first thing I look at is I see that, yes, there are definitely markers. I'm trying to think of, like, as casual fans, if you want to look at a few things just to, like, for your own model at home. Some of the things that are really important are a team's third down ability to convert. Now, if you can somehow sort it so it's, like, third and short, teams who are in third and short more often, they're going to be in better situations. Teams, now, red area can be a little bit deceptive because sometimes teams score from the deep red or outside the 20 more consistently. So that one's not quite my favorite, but if you're looking at on offense, what's going on third down? Are you consistently able to convert third downs? Are you getting more first downs? Maybe the better thing is the number of first downs per game that, you know, you're earned first downs. And then defensive-wise, stop the run. You saw that from the Chargers. Stop the run specifically. And then, you know, being able to have defensive pressure on passing downs that's consistently disruptive. You know, like disruptive pressure, stop the run, you're golden. You're in pretty good shape as long as you have a nice uptick in third down conversions or earned first downs.
Those are more.
That's like my baby model.
Those are more advanced than what I've looked at the last few years. So this is the third year I've done it. A couple of years ago, I wanted to put together and see, like, you know, at that point, I did the last 10 years. And I looked at a lot of different things, you know, run defense, pass defense, sacks, red zone conversions, overall offense, you know, total offense, scoring offense, total defense, scoring defense, point differential. And I went through all of those things over the last 10 years and put the teams that won the conference and where they ranked. And there were a lot of those categories that were just all over the board. But there were five categories that all had a consistency with the teams that won the conference. This is just pretty generic. It's not third down or red zone or anything like that. Point differential, in the last 12 years, the winner of the Super Bowl was in the top three of their conference. In those 12 years that I looked at, 20 of the 24 teams that made the Super Bowl were in the top 3 point differential of their conference. Scoring defense, 6 straight winners of the Super Bowl have been in the top 10 of the league in scoring defense. Last 8 years, 13 of 16 in scoring defense. Scoring offense, 7 of the last 8 have been in the top 10, and 5 straight have been in the top 5. Total offense, 10 out of 10 the last 5 years have been ranked in the top 10 of the teams that have made the Super Bowl. So I went through, Cynthia, and looked at all of the teams that fit the criteria. There were 2 teams in the AFC that matched up with all 5 of those, and there were 2 teams in the NFC that matched up with all 5 of those. Now, the last 2 years we've done it, we've actually eliminated teams, and the teams we had remaining went and played in the Super Bowl. We had Tampa Bay and Kansas City last year, and we had San Francisco and Kansas City the year before. There are 4 teams remaining of my little generic playoff eliminator.
I think it's not generic at all. I think that's great.
In the AFC, it's Kansas City and Buffalo, and in the NFC, it's Tampa Bay and Dallas. Those are the 4 teams that match all of those criteria. Dallas is the one that might surprise, but the way that they're playing and defensively when they've got some pass rushers back and Parsons is a game wrecker, and offensively if Dak turns it on, I could see them, you know, making it. But Chiefs and Buffalo matches up with what most people think, right? And Tampa Bay is certainly good enough. What it doesn't take into account, though, Cynthia, is injuries. Without Godwin, without Antonio Brown, Leonard Fournette, that might hurt Tampa Bay.
As an add-on there, because that will change some of their ability to...
And gone, Cynthia. And gone.
I was like, wait a minute, is she talking? And then she was like, and that's an add-on there.
There's your drive. And gone, Cynthia Freeland.
I was like, did she just... She wanted to start talking, and you kept talking. She was like, you know what? Screw him. I'll just sit here, and I won't say anything.
Cynthia Freeland brought to you by the parking spot. Easy to spot, easy to park. Parking spot, in case you had. Cynthia is back.
She has no idea who that impression is you were just doing.
Yeah, that was the Royals' Denny Matthews. When he calls a home run, he goes, and gone. And so you left, and I said, and gone, Cynthia Freeland. So the last thing we heard was, I would guess, and then it went away.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, I would guess that the Packers getting Jair Alexander back, and, you know, for this playoff stretch.
True.
That's the one where I think that number could switch, just because they were missing some pieces. They had some weird games with some strange, you know, that's the only one that I would think, like, huh, I wonder how that one nets out too.
Yeah, being in the top 10 of scoring defense, Green Bay is 14th in scoring defense. So maybe Jair getting back, and he's such a good player. You know, him being back could certainly make a difference. I was just surprised that Green Bay showed up in just a couple of those. They showed up in scoring offense and total offense, but not point differential and not defense there.
Yeah,
so that was a little surprise.
It's funny when you watch those Green Bay games and you realize just how dominant their offense is compared to, like, their defense is good, but not great.
Yeah.
Like, it's not great. And then it's funny because you didn't mention the Titans either, and
no.
Both of them are number one, which show you that if you're in a crappy division, you can get some extra wins that help you get that good ability to make it to the one seed and to get the bye.
Tennessee only shows up in one of the five, and that is scoring defense. They're in the top 10. But, I mean, if you look at point differential, Tennessee is number six in the AFC. If you look at total offense, being in the top five, Tennessee is 17th, and scoring offense, they're 15th, being in the top five.
Yeah.
So they would not match up with teams the last couple. Again, it's only 2 years that we've done it. So who knows? I mean, it might be the next 5 years we don't come up with the teams that make or win the Super Bowl. But so far, it's 2 for 2, and I will take my chances if the Chiefs and Buffalo are. And what's odd, too, is that could be divisional round matchups next week, Tampa Bay and Dallas and Kansas City and Buffalo.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Dallas one's really interesting to me, because Dallas is kind of getting, now if they can get past the Niners, I think that's a sneaky upset alert game for me. But if they get past the Niners, then I think that they actually match up pretty well right now with the Bucs, given all the Bucs injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird how, like, the Niners, who seem like such a weaker team than the Bucs, they're in a spot where they have almost better odds of beating the Cowboys than the Bucks. Like, it'd be a close game forecast for each one for me.
I kind of feel like that with Cincinnati. Like, I think the Raiders can beat Cincinnati but can't beat Tennessee. I think the Bengals have a pretty decent chance of losing to the Raiders, but I think they could go into Tennessee and win that game.
I totally agree with you, especially just what they're built for and how they're able to. It's very interesting. I actually have the Rams losing this game. I was super surprised.
Oh wow!
Yeah, against the Cardinals, but I think the Rams don't let, like, I, you know, it's interesting that Kyle Shanahan has beaten Sean McVay now 6 times, and I don't know if this would be 7. So I kind of want to see the 7th matchup, because I'm a glutton for punishment of, you know, these weird math things, like meet up 3 times, see what happens. Like, so it's just interesting. Yeah. Those are all very interesting. It's all based on matchups. Nothing. I will say that, you know, the Chiefs and Steelers game feels like the most lopsided one. I mean, Vegas agrees with me, but, you know, it just also feels like it from what you've seen this season.
Do you have a score or a range for the Chiefs and Steelers on Sunday night?
Right now, I did like my initial projections. I think I have between 11 and 14 point wins. So I'm not out of whack from Vegas too far, but it's I think it's between 11 and 14. And part of that is that I think that, you know, if the Chiefs continue to get off to a strong start, I don't think that they, you know, fire up the, like, let's score, you know, like they're not going to be like the Cowboys and put up a 50 burger on anyone. I just think they don't show stuff like that. I think they keep it more conservative to get out of there with the least amount of injuries and showing the least amount of the playbook possible.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All right, last one. Who over who in the Super Bowl?
Whew. I actually have I'm going to stick with my original from the beginning of the season, Chiefs over Packers. The Packers did me a favor by becoming the number one seed. That makes me feel, like, justified in some way. And the fact that the Chiefs, you know, very easily could have been the number one, but still happened to be the highest probability at this point, still this late in the game. I'm going to stick with what my original math has. And, you know, obviously Melvin Ingram made them a little bit stronger. So, you know, I'm going to stick with that.
And earned the sixth round draft pick trade on one play against the Broncos, I would say. Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. Cynthia, you're the best. I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Enjoy the football this week. And we'll talk next week, no matter what. But hopefully we were talking about a matchup in the divisional round. I think that'll be the case, but we shall see. Cynthia, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and have a great weekend. Enjoy Super Wild Card Weekend. 3 days of football.
That's right. Yes, we're gluttons. 3 days. Cynthia Freeland, she is awesome. NFL Network analytics expert Cynthia Freeland has the Chiefs over the Packers, has the Chiefs beating the Steelers by 11-14, so right around where Vegas has it, and really her point being that the matchup is lopsided, but Andy Reid and the Chiefs wouldn't typically go in and just keep throwing out stuff in the playbook that you haven't seen or new wrinkles just to put up 45 or 50 points in the first round. They could take an early lead and take the foot off the gas and run the football against the worst rush defense in the NFL and the Steelers.
My guy Ben Roethlisberger was talking to the media today.
Oh, was he?
Being kind of tongue-in-cheek, saying, what, I mean, we're like 20-point underdogs in this game, and they're the best team in football. He said, I know they're not the number one seed, but they've been to the past two Super Bowls, so we can't win. We've got nothing to lose going in there. So kind of playing the nobody believes in us, we don't have a chance, and kind of tongue-in-cheek, calling themselves 20-point underdogs in the game.
Well, he's never let can't or don't stop him in the past.
True.
So
usually won't take no for an answer.
He should be okay from that standpoint. The biggest obstacle, she has it as the Bills, which would totally make sense. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We continue rolling. We'll hang out with Mick Schaefer in the noon hour. We'll get an update and a final for our zone over-unders with the Chiefs this year. Thrift Store Price is Right. Chiefs coming up later on in the show as well. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Travis Kelce. That's good news. Travis Kelce talking today. More Zone next.
You're in the Zone with Jason Anderson.
Be honest, I didn't even know who Jason Anderson was.
On Sports Radio 810. WHB.
All right, thank you to Cynthia Freeland. Let's hear from Mike Tomlin. We'll hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce in the 1 o'clock hour. Let's hear from Steelers coach Mike Tomlin, who mentioned to the Pittsburgh media that he had dozed off during the Raiders and Chargers game, even though it had such an impact on whether the Steelers would make it to the playoffs.
It really wasn't ease of mind. I was beat. You know, think about my day. We had an overtime game in Baltimore, and I flew back to Pittsburgh, and, you know, I stopped by my office when I landed for a second and gathered some information and did some things, took it to the house, and to be honest with you, I think it was a 15-point game or something there later on, and so, you know, I wasn't necessarily concerned about who was going to win, but the numbers were such that it didn't appear that, you know, a tie would be a deal, and so, you know, I was tired. It wasn't my intentions, but, you know, that's how it happened, you know. I live in a girl household now that my sons are off at college, and so my wife and daughter were less interested, obviously.
That's great. I mean, it was around midnight, and he's right. Think about my day and what we did that day and the morning getting ready for that. It's a win and you're in. The emotional drain of going into having to come back, getting an interception in the end zone by the Steelers to then get the ball back and score when it looked like you were probably, you know, going to be in pretty dire straits if you don't get that interception, and then winning in overtime, and then that game not starting till 8:15 mm-hmm. your time and almost midnight. Yeah, I can see where he would, not his intention, but the next thing you know, he's asleep and he wakes up and like, what?
Probably good for his heart that he did not watch that.
Imagine his surprise if he wakes up and the Raiders took a knee and he's out of the playoffs.
That would suck.
No idea.
Ray McLeod said earlier, he was talking, I believe it was yesterday, maybe it was the day before, that it felt like he was playing a game while watching that game because his emotions were so high. He said it literally felt like I was playing in the game because I was so jacked up with every play that was happening.
Chase Claypool tweeted out in the overtime when the Chargers kicked the field goal to tie it and the Raiders were running the football. He tweeted out with all caps, "No, not like this," with all exclamation points, like 10 of them after that.
He didn't tweet out losing, never heard of her?
No.
Okay.
He did not.
Okay.
He did not. He certainly heard of it when they played the Chiefs a few weeks ago. Mike Tomlin talking about the Steelers getting whipped by the Chiefs the day after Christmas, but saying they've got to flush that one away.
Sorry, which one? Hang on.
The Steelers whipped by the Chiefs after Christmas and flushing it away, that one.
Flushing it away.
That's what it says right there.
Ah, that one.
Yep,
okay.
Flush it, just like a toilet.
So many things went wrong in that performance that it's tough to really glean any specific component of it, to be quite honest with you. We laid an egg. We laid an egg from a planning standpoint. We laid an egg from a playing standpoint. And so we own that. It's probably just a reboot, if you will. I don't know that we're looking to glean anything from the experience in terms of our planning and ultimately our play this time around.
It's interesting that we talk about the Chiefs' struggles in the playoffs the last couple of years in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. You know, talked about it with Cynthia that the way they have started in 2019, they were minus 20 in those three games. Now they were minus 21 against Houston. They were minus 3 against Tennessee. They were plus 4 in the first quarter against the 49ers. So they were minus 20, really slow starters. And then they were plus 62 the final three quarters. Now they were plus 41 against the Texans, but they were still plus 14 in the final three quarters against the Titans, and they were plus 7 against San Francisco. And that continued the next year, this past year. Cleveland, they were leading 6-3, so they were plus 3. They were only plus 2 the rest of the way, but they were 13-0 in the second quarter, and then Mahomes gets injured. So they had gone after that 6-3 start and started to put it on the Browns. Of course, Mahomes gets injured. They beat the Browns by 2 points in the final three quarters. Buffalo, not many people remember, they were trailing 9-0 to the Bills in the first quarter. They had
after the McCall Hardman fumbled punt.
They had some issues there. They outscored the Bills by 23 the final three quarters. And then, of course, they were down by 4 to the Bucs in the first quarter. And then they were 18 points minus those three games. So they ended up being plus 7 last year in the second, third, and fourth quarter, while being minus 10 in the first. So the last two playoffs, they have been negative in the first quarter and plus second, third, and fourth. What's the exact opposite this year?
Yeah, they've been jumping out big.
They're number 1 in point differential in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They're number 20 in the second, third, and fourth quarter this year. Does that continue in the playoffs, or can you combine those? Can you jump out to the early lead like you do this year, but then
keep scoring?
The playoffs of the last couple of years, do what you do in the second, third, and fourth quarter. That would be awesome. We'll see. Mike Tomlin talking about, let's play the one with Melvin Ingram. He says that he isn't surprised that Melvin Ingram has made an impact for the Chiefs.
You know, I assume that to be the case. You know, I think he's a good player. That's why we signed him in the summer. And so I'm not shocked that he's doing what I thought he could do. That's why we had an interest initially. We need guys that have a desire to be here. We don't want hostages. Melvin was unhappy in his work circumstance, and so it was better off that he not be here. We believe in the intangible quality that is team, and so we had an opportunity to get value for him.
Well, I'm glad he didn't have the team intangible in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Because whether he's got the team intangible or not right now with the Chiefs, He's made some plays, and it has benefited the entire team with guys moving around. And boy, oh boy, that play against the Denver Broncos on 2nd and 2 and the Chiefs down by a point and running in and hitting Melvin Gordon the way that Jadeveon Clowney at South Carolina did against Mike Hart in Michigan.
You remember in 2019, two huge midseason acquisitions.
I do.
With Stefan Wisniewski and Mike Pinnell. And yes, they added Terrell Suggs late, but Terrell Suggs was not nearly the impact that Wisniewski and Mike Pinnell were. Both of those guys played really big parts on that Super Bowl team. Melvin Ingram's been as good as, or better than both of those guys.
And we'll see what happens in the postseason.
Yeah,
but I think can make a case so far he's been a bigger impact because of what it's done for Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made some plays as well. And I think what we saw, even specifically with one play, is that for 50 plays, he's not going to be Melvin Ingram of the past. But there can be a game or a play or two in a game that you see the old Melvin Ingram come out and he just has a difference-making play. He makes it and it can change the course of a drive or end a drive. He's not going to do it like he did, you know, 5-6 years ago. But that play showed he's got juice left from time to time that he can turn it on and have that. But he's not going to do it over the course of an entire game. We take a timeout. We come back. We wrap up this hour next.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson.
You know, Jason's ego has been put to the side. He doesn't say anything in the media. He just stays positive, keeps a smile on his face, and keeps cashing checks. But right now, it's time for Jason to go because he's been a puppet for a long time.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Stan has never liked me. I just don't get it. I don't know the issues that are there. It's just unfortunate is really what it is.
Because you're a Mizzou boy.
913. That's exactly right. Yes, 913-912-4810. Text says, don't discount Mel's impact on Frank the Tank. Yeah, certainly. On a lot of guys on the defensive line. And then this text is pretty good. Says, Ingram isn't as good as he once was, but he's as good once as he ever was.
It's a country music song.
Yeah.
I ain't as good as I once was. I have no idea who sings it.
But I'm good once as I
George Strait? I have no idea.
I don't know. Randy Travis. That's who it is. It's Randy Travis.
You know that? Or you're just guessing?
Heck no. I just...
Okay.
It's Merle Haggard. It's got to be. Waylon Jennings.
Tim McGraw.
Probably. Yes.
I wonder who could... How long we could name country music singers before we run out. Probably not a very
Conway
long
Twitty.
Can you name any of them after 1990?
I know, right?
It doesn't sound like
probably,
it.
Probably not.
Merle Haggard, Conway Twitty.
I see that
Randy
sparkling
Travis
little diamond on your hand. Hello, darling.
You know who likes to listen to country music?
By the way, it's Toby Keith that sings that song.
Oh, okay.
According to the 50 text messages that are coming in.
You know who likes to listen to country music?
Who?
Probably. People in RVs. That there, Clark, that's an RV.
But don't you go getting used to it because I'm taking it with me when we leave here next month or when we leave the RV show in Kansas City presented by Unlimited RV, January 20th through the 23rd at the KCI Expo Center.
Smooth
free parking.
Transition.
Thank you. Millions of dollars worth of RVs under one roof and all of them have lifetime warranties. Check out all types of RVs from Forest River, Keystone, Coachman, Winnebago, and more.
Give away 2 4-packs of passes. You want to do it?
Should we do that?
Yeah.
Right now.
It's next weekend at the KCI Expo Center. Free parking. If you want information, go to rvshowkc.com for information about the event. But we've got a couple of 4-packs of tickets to give away.
8 and 10 beards? Color 8 and 10? Okay. Callers 8 and 10 will win the 4-packs. To go to the RV show in Kansas City, presented by Unlimited RV. That's January 20th through the 23rd at the KCI Expo Center. Free parking, rvshowkc.com for more info.
And your tickets will be at will call, so you won't have to come here to the station to pick them up. If you're thinking, I don't want to get down to Overland Park, or I can't get down to Overland Park before then, tickets will be at will call. So you do not have to come here to pick them up.
I like a lot of the Toby Keiths that are coming in, but then I like a couple of them that have come in that says Tony Keith and then Kobe Teeth. All of them have some version of that song. We take a timeout. We come back. We get some version of Mick Schaefer next.